Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all the Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. Today's episode is being dropped on the 28th day of October 2020. And we are going to be talking about the final baseball game of the year, the final Major League Baseball game of the year, the crowning of a new champion, and two surreal subplots that dominated what was a very competitive and entertaining World Series. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. And you're staying at home during these trying times and here in Los Angeles, smoky times, be sure to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB. Or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. And also check out Jeff and Vince, the host of Locked On Dodgers. They have a lot to talk about now that their team are the World Series champs. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB Pod. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Let's get to the first thing. And this is the thing I want to focus on, because there's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about in terms of cash, in terms of Turner, of all different things we can bring up. But the fact of the matter is, the Los Angeles Dodgers won the World Series. In a shortened season, of course, and a strange playoff, of course. But do you know what? They took advantage of everything that was laid down to them. They were handed the same situation that all the teams were, and they said, do you know what? We're going to go ahead and play our best during the 60-game season. They won 43 out of 63 games, had the best record in baseball, made short work of the Brewers. I bet you forgot they were even in the playoffs. Made short work of an injured San Diego team that probably should have fared better. They faced adversity, down 3-1 to Atlanta, came back to win that, and then took the World Series. And give the Dodgers a ton of credit that they had that crushing game where they lost with the two runs, you know, the two runs on the single and then the error and all this stuff happening in game four. They very easily just could have turned the entire series on its nose. They came out and they won the Kershaw start, and then they won this game. And they were put right on their heels with the Rosarena hitting the home run in the first. They were down a run before they even came to bat. And obviously they were facing the dominating Blake Snell performance. And, you know, Gonsolin had his opener, and he didn't fare too well. I mean, he had five base runners in an inning and two-thirds. And while it probably drove a lot of us batty that they had so many pitching changes, especially, you know, Wood could have gone another inning, but Dylan Floro, Alex Wood, Pedro Baez, Victor Gonzalez, Gratterall, and Urias shut down the Rays, held them to two hits, no walks, and 12 strikeouts over 7 1/3 innings of stellar relief. And you may not like that style of baseball. You may not like the bullpen game. I'm not particularly crazy about it, not because I'm an old fool, but because it drives me crazy when they make changes that they don't need to make. But that being said, it worked. The Dodgers won. And also give Dave Roberts credit that when Urias, much like he did in the finale against Atlanta, where he pitched the final three innings of Game 7, where it was like, you know, you could have brought in Kershaw, you could have brought in Kenley Jansen, but instead, no, Urias is dealing. Why would we take him out? Same thing going on here, that the longest pitching for any of the Dodgers pitchers was the 2 1/3 innings by Urias. He faced seven batters. He got them all out. And he threw 27 pitches, and he struck out, what, he struck out four batters, including the final batter, and got the outs that he needed. And, you know, give also a lot of credit to Victor Gonzalez, who pitched really, really well, and he got the win. That relief wins are borderline meaningless. And give the Dodgers bats credit, especially Mookie Betts. In this game, you know, going 2 for 4, he got the big double after Barnes got the single. Betts got the big double, scored on on the ground out, and then hit that home run off of Fairbanks in the eighth inning that, with the way that the Rays bats were flailing, you knew that just put the game out of reach. You know, for those innings, the seventh and eighth, after the Dodgers took the lead, the Rays were one swing away from tying the game. And to be honest with you, even though I didn't really have a dog in the fight, I wanted to have a game seven. I like game sevens, and I wanted to have a game seven. But also I wanted to see the Rays tie the game because of what happened in the sixth inning. I didn't want that to become the dominant narrative of the game. There's a reason I'm formatting this episode like this, because I want to give credit to the Dodgers right up the top, because I got a lot to say about some other things. But the first and foremost is the Dodgers were the better team. And if it wasn't for that weird final inning in game four, they would have been up 3-1. You know, they were in position to put this away on Sunday if they got that one more strike and if the craziness didn't ensue. But it did. But they bounced right back with a win on game five and the win in the game six, and they deserve the title. And we deserve to give Dave Roberts credit for winning. We deserve to give Mookie Betts credit for, I mean, he had a good, solid World Series, hit another home run in a clinching game, much like he did in 2018. Boy, the Red Sox better use that money well. Seager won the MVP. He also was the MVP of the National League Championship Series, so it's a pretty dominant October for him. And give him credit. Give this team credit. They got the hits when they needed to. They got the outs when they needed to. And Dave Roberts didn't turn to Kenley Jansen after game four. You know, he turned to Trinan. He turned to Urias. He adapted. And yeah, I think he pulled Kershaw too early in game five. But in the end, as I said, if you win, those mistakes are no longer remembered. In the end, that didn't sink the Dodgers, unlike what happened with Kevin Cash. And there's no way I can go on and not bring this up. You know, I mean, I've never seen a clinching World Series game where so many of the storylines were not about the players' performances. Kevin Cash is a fine manager and made great calls to get the Rays to within two wins of winning the World Series. But my God, man, you have to adapt to the situation. I was typing on Twitter during the first, you know, four or five innings when Blake Snell was absolutely dominating the Dodgers. I was making jokes about watch them pull him if he lets up another hit. Watch him pull him if he lets up one hit. And he let up one hit and they pulled him. Blake Snell only threw 73 pitches. If he was 5 1/3 innings and was like throwing 104 pitches, I'll listen to you. I'll say, yeah, he was laboring. If he was pitching 5 1/3 innings, but just looked like he was running on fumes, all right, I'll listen to you. I'll listen to it and say, okay, tell me why. But he wasn't. He was still pitching great. And more importantly, and I brought this up before, and I talked about this specifically, the Rays bullpen was pooped. I know they had an off day yesterday, but it seemed important to get as many, to squeeze as many outs from Blake Snell as possible. So you didn't have to rely on the relievers who were so brilliant during the regular season, but were really starting to lose it. And Snell let up the hit to Barnes, and then out comes Cash. 5 1/3 innings. He had at least finished the sixth. And you start the bullpen with a clean inning. But no, now he's got a runner on. And who did he bring in? He brought in Nick Anderson. Nick Anderson, who had a spectacular regular season. Nobody's taking that away from him. My God, the guy finished with a 0.55 ERA. He struck out 26 batters in 16 in the third innings. He only walked 3. He had a remarkable, remarkable season as a Rays reliever, but he was not pitching well in the postseason. He had allowed a run in 6 consecutive appearances, a major league record for a single postseason, and basically was the worst kind of pitcher to bring in to face Mookie Betts, who promptly, immediately got the double. The minute he got the double, I just said, there's no way the Rays are going to win this game now. It was over, even though technically they were still winning. Wild pitch, ground out. Next thing you know, it's 2-1. And in the end, Anderson only got one out. They had to get Loop in there to finish the inning. So there you go. When it looked stupid while it was happening, and it did, and you know, it was terrible when it happened, and it just put the Rays in a position like their ace was dealing. I mean, the 6 innings, okay. I was thinking maybe just have him go on the 7th and see how many innings, how many, you know, go batter for batter in the 7th. But Anderson looked bad, finished with a 9 ERA in the World Series. Later, they brought in Fairbanks. Fairbanks looked bad, let up 2 hits, including a home run and 2 walks. He finished with a high ERA. You have to sometimes adapt to the situation. You sometimes have to realize that, yes, there's something you did that got you to this point in the postseason. How you manage in a regular season is not necessarily how you manage in the postseason. In the postseason, you make decisions like having Urias pitch the final 3 innings or 2 1/3 innings or whatever it was. In the postseason, you come in and say, do you want, I'm going to have Madison Bumgarner come out on 2 days rest and throw the final 5 innings, or have Randy Johnson come out with no days rest, because you play the situation. You would never do that in the regular season. During the regular season, maybe this is how you manage. But also, you don't have a bunch of games in a row like they just had in the ALCS and in the World Series, where you're using the same pitcher day in and day out. I implored a few days ago that Cash find someone other than Nick Anderson to lean on, because Nick Anderson was no longer reliable. And now Cash is going to be mentioned in the same breath as Grady Little for making one of the single worst decisions, managerial decisions, in an elimination game in baseball history. Yes, I know that the Rays got to where they were by using the analytics and saying that, you know, 2 times through the order is one thing, but 3 times through the order is this, that, and the other thing. And there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be screaming like old school and saying, my day, Jack Morris won 10 innings in game 7 of the World Series. And people who hate analytics will point to this as the reason to go against analytics. Of course, completely ignoring that the Dodgers were using analytics left and right, and they wound up winning the World Series, sometimes in spite of the decisions made by Dave Roberts. And I think there has to be a mid-ground. There has to be somewhere in the middle between relying on the analytics and adapting to the situation at hand. I'm not saying play everything by your gut. That'd be insane. That'd be crazy and would lead to horrific managerial decisions as well. But relying on the book is what got us here. Pulling a guy who was dominating when the Rays desperately needed a starting pitcher to give them length, and you bring in someone who was on a horrible slump and continued it. That cost them Game 6 of the World Series. Now, was it going to cost them the World Series? I think it cost them this game. I don't think there's any doubt that it cost them this game. Now, if they had won this game, would they have won tomorrow with Walker Buehler pitching against Charlie Morton? I don't know the answer to that. Neither do you. And maybe the Dodgers would have won that, and the whole point would have been moot. And I made the point the other day when I felt that Roberts pulled Kershaw too early. And I thought that was a dumb move. And I said, even though it didn't bite him, it was a dumb move because they need length from their starting pitcher. In that case, it wound up not hurting the Dodgers, so therefore no one will remember it. In this case, it hurt the Rays, and therefore everyone will remember it. Both manager made the same mistake. I think it was a bad move both times. It only came back to haunt him once. I think you got to find a mid-ground. And part of that mid-ground is probably you have to manage differently in the postseason than you would in the regular season. You have to play a little more by gut and a little more by instinct. Not totally. You know, I'm not a Buddhist, and I don't claim to be a Buddhist, but there is something that is a quote from the Buddha that I think about from time to time. Life is like the harp string. If it's strung too tight, it won't play. If it is too loose, it hangs. The tension that produces the beautiful sound lies in the middle. So perhaps the beautiful sound of a World Series title is somewhere in the middle of the analytics and playing by instinct, by playing with your gut and saying, I think this guy's going to push us through, and looking at the numbers and saying, the numbers say it's not going to happen. There's got to be a mid-ground. Maybe it relies a little more on analytics than gut, but to totally eliminate the gut, suddenly you have Blake Snell being removed and the Rays are on the outside looking in. And the Rays had a wonderful year. Kevin Cash is a wonderful manager, and no one's going to remember that. They're just going to remember this decision. And man, they could use a break and a treat. And Rays, I can't offer you much, but I can offer you a Built Bar, which has 18 amazing flavors, including 6 new ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, and carrot cake, along with apple almond crisp, to go along with their original flavors, which includes my favorite, which is chocolate raspberry. All the bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. Built Bars are healthy. It's great for the health conscious guy. If you're trying to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat, easy for you to say. I'm not even going to edit that out. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and great for the keto diet. Let's take a look at coconut almond, which has 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams sugar, 5 grams net carbs. Free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Then go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. That's builtbar.com. So the other thing, which is just absolutely surreal, was the whole Justin Turner thing. Now, I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit. The World Series just ended about an hour ago. Okay, so we're still just getting word in about what the hell happened with Turner. He was removed from the game, and I think everybody thought, oh, maybe he pulled a hamstring or something like that. Turns out he tested positive for COVID in the middle of a game. What? He's been in the bubble. He's been amongst other players, and he tested positive for COVID. Why did we find this out in the middle of the game? And why was Turner on the field during celebration? What is going on? Perhaps it's appropriate that COVID raised its ugly head during the celebration of a World Series title. I mean, it was a strange year. You can say about everything this year, and Major League Baseball bungled their share of things, but, you know, the game of baseball is so great that it can overcome all the forces working against it. So what happened with Justin Turner, we're going to have to find out. We don't know. It makes no sense that he was on the field. What would have happened if there was a game seven? Would they have been quarantined? Would have been postponed? What the hell is going on? Baseball does overcome this because it's so wonderful. But I don't understand what was happening. And I have a feeling that as this unfolds, as this onion unfolds, we're going to find that some things were not handled as well as we thought. And COVID raises its ugly head and casts a pall a little bit on this celebration of what should be a celebration of baseball. You know, we're going to be talking about Kevin Cash, and we're going to be talking about Justin Turner's COVID positive test and why it wasn't announced and what was known when or where. I have a feeling that what is going to be talked about in this game for years to come is not the play on the field, which is why I wanted to open this podcast by praising the play on the field, because that's what we should be talking about. This has been weird. It's been a weird, weird year. And I was vocal that I didn't want to see a season at one point because we were in the middle of a pandemic. And guess what? We still are. We still are. And the pandemic affects us in ways that are subtle, in ways that are profound, in ways that are weird. And there have been quarantining and everything like that, and it's been a shadow over this entire game. And yet, it's still been our friend and our companion in what has been just a surreal year. I'm not even getting into the political. I'm getting into the quarantine. I'm getting into, here in California, the fires, the deaths. We all know people who died this year. I know people who died this year. And so baseball, even though I didn't think it was a great idea for them to play, I'm glad they did, because I needed a friend. And the daily companion of baseball was a welcome friend. As I said before, I listened more than watched. I did watch the last couple of games, but I've listened to more because in my head, it looked normal. In my head, the games were being played at Dodger Stadium in the Trop with full capacity crowds. Yes, even at the Trop. And my heart breaks to my many, many Rays fan friends. Barb, I feel for you. And all my friends who are big Tampa Bay Ray fans, I know how devoted you are to this team. So, it's gone. Another year is over. Another season is gone. And we're going to have to hope that it comes back in some normal form in the spring next year. baseball and all aspects of life hopefully will be somewhat normal in 2021. It may never be totally normal again, but maybe he'll be back and I can actually go to a game. The last game I went to was game one of the division series at Dodger Stadium last year, 2019. The last game I saw live was a Dodger playoff victory. The last game I'm going to see this year is a Dodger victory at home in Arlington. Go figure. By the way, Globe Life Field, not impressed. It's kind of boring looking. It looks like the default station, stadium in one of those 80s video games like Hardball. But I digress. Goodbye, my friend. Hopefully we'll see you next year. But I'm sticking around and I'm going to continue doing podcasts all through the off season. So go to the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app and go to all the places we can get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at LockedOnMLBPod. Follow me at Sully Baseball on Twitter. And during these times, we could really use a baseball podcast to listen to. Tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB. Saying goodbye to the season and hello to the off season. This has been Locked On MLB for the 28th day of October 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. As always, you can call me Sully.